Oh, you got a twofer on
Jordan, Jordan's got all of them.
All the time.
Does that one work?
Yeah.
There you go.
There we go. Confetti.
Yeah.
Oh, you got a little in your hair. Brush it out, Shane. Brush it out.
Mine doesn't do any of that stuff, man.
What were we gonna talk about something with, was it the Trump thing?
Yeah, let's kick this off with Trump. I mean, if we can't talk about this first, we should. I mean, this is breaking historic news in America. I mean, a president has gone to, well, at least be convicted of a felony in New York. And this is world news right now, for God's sakes. I'm curious what you guys think, and especially Larry, what's on your mind with all this?
Well, I don't know what the legal implications are and if he can appeal it. And, he's running for president. He's in the lead. In my opinion, of the two major candidates, he's the better choice. Which is not to say I'm in love with the guy.
Amen.
It's all one big uniparty. I don't know the implications of it. And it kind of suggests that the country's kind of becoming a banana republic, where we've got, these trials that are messing up the elections and so on and so forth. I mean, one of the things I was saying to a couple of you guys before the show started, I mean, and the show's, I think, got a lot of veterans listening or, participating on it. I mean, keep in mind, I Googled it before the show. I mean, both of these major candidates, Biden and Trump, received 5 draft deferments each. So, everybody listening to the show, in my view, is more honorable than these two men, because you're veterans. And, I'm not a big fan of either of these two guys. I like one of them a little better than the other, but,
it's not saying much.
That's a low bar.
Yeah. It's a low bar.
Right. There's no doubt in my mind that Trump is significantly better, in terms of where the country would go than Biden. But, it's the country is very badly broken on a lot of dimensions. And one of the biggest ones is politics. And, just the fact that these are the two best candidates that these two parties can put forward is, to me, it's pathetic. So that's kind of how I see it.
That's a pretty solid answer.
How do you guys see it? I mean, I don't know all the mechanics of the trial, right?
Yeah, after the first 10 trials where they didn't get guilty verdicts, this is just kind of one of those places where, everybody knows I'm not a Trumper. I'm obviously not for Biden or any of the other guys either. But it's this is one of those places where you see what malincentive structures can do. You see just how bizarrely wrong this can all go, where, there's political witch hunts. And one of the biggest things that I think this is doing is really fomenting a population that's already on edge, this divide and conquer attitude.
Yeah.
Right. Unfortunately, I think what they've done is they've galvanized a side that is a lot of veterans, a lot of guys that wear uniforms, a lot of guys that are in the gun clubs. And, for the life of me, I think they think they want this fight. They think they need that violence for some other draconian reasons. And, it's like, guys, you better be real careful about, the fight you're picking, because once you break that emergency glass, we were talking about the sheepdog thing with, the Bill Stebbins wrote earlier, and I hope we'll get to that in the show. Maybe we'll open the show with it.
There you go.
But this is one of those times in America where I definitely tell people, hey, take a breath, take a step back. Let's not do anything stupid. 2020 was one of those areas where we could have done some really stupid things, as guys that have the means and capabilities and network. And instead we chose peace. We said, hey, we've got the strength on our side. We will ride this out. And at the end of it, we'll be better off and they'll be exposed. And this is exactly that same case. You're right. Like, Bitcoin veterans, first and foremost, everybody that's out there and the sound of my voice and everybody else is, this is a peaceful revolution that we're trying to conduct. And if you are out there trying to, give the spark to the gasoline that they've set for you, you're just going to walk straight into that trap.
So and I'll tell you, I tell you even further, the people that I see that are trying to spark things, to me, they're the ones that are drawing suspicion.
Yep.
Because yeah. we saw it on J6. They had people internally that were starting trouble that were saying, let's go, let's do this thing, let's go get them. Okay. They were with they were instigating intentionally on purpose. So if I see that happening from people, I'm going to think, okay, well, you might just be an op over here. And that's going to draw suspicion from me. And I think that we should all question people like that, because it should be fairly obvious at this point that of course they want civil unrest. Of course they want people to jump up and say, oh, you're not going to do this to our guy. The reality is, I believe that this is going to be overturned. I think that the highest courts are going to step in and say, wait a minute. Okay. This is a bunch of, because the judge in this case behaved in a lot of ways that are questionable. I think that it's going to be overturned. I think it's going to be tossed out. But even if it's not, there's nothing in the Constitution that stops this person from serving out a presidential term in prison. There really isn't. He could, and imagine, I mean, stranger things are happening these days. All right. I mean, they locked down an entire damn planet off of a virus a few years ago. Let's not forget about that. And everybody just gave up their freedoms. So it wouldn't surprise me at this point if he did. But again, think about it. What kind of a sentence is this is really going to be expected to be carried out, even if it does get followed through with? Are they going to throw the guy in an actual freaking prison in an orange jumpsuit? I doubt it. That doesn't really happen to people like that. So I just don't know, man. I think that the worst thing people can do is to freak out right now and start throwing rocks around and start acting like crazy people and giving adversarial elements what they want, because that's what they want.
Yeah. Well, Shane's right. Keep it peaceful. No reason to overreact here.
Yeah.
The feeling that I have is that these folks are becoming more and more desperate. I think the writing is on the wall. It's pretty clear that without extreme cheating, they probably don't stand any chance. And I think that probably scares them a little bit. I suspect that I don't know. I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say, I suspect that if Trump were to be elected president, he learned some stuff in his first term. I think he's going to swing a lot harder in his second if he gets elected. He's not going to allow the kind of sort of blockages that happened to him before. I think he's just going to clean house. And so I think that probably scares them quite badly. And they're looking for another situation where people basically lose their shit and pop off, I think.
Yeah.
I think they want that. And I think the best thing that anybody can possibly do right now is just not do that. Hang out, chill out, let it unfold. And that will just crank up the pressure continuously. And that is not necessarily a bad thing.
That's precisely, that's kind of like what I had a couple friends like almost immediately text me asking like my opinion. And I was like, it's all it means to me is just this time to like, we're already like watching closely of what's being done and like what they're doing. Now it's time to watch like really tightly on things that are happening, specifically things that might be getting distracted away from these kinds of headlines, right? Yeah. Like there were some things that came through today that got really drowned out because of the whole Trump getting guilty.
So apparently the White House has the current admin has authorized the use of United States weaponry inside of Russia by Ukraine.
Is that true?
The rumor. I don't know if it's true or not. All I know is that if it turns out to be true, that is just one more escalation, right? And if you look at what Putin's been saying this entire time. And look, whether you like the guy or not, if he views this as a series of escalations, of course he's going to escalate, right? And the more that escalates, the more likely that other countries get drawn into it, the more likely we head to a larger situation, the more likely, escalations are never good.
And yesterday, I can't remember which member of the Russian military was quoted in saying that they're claiming that they're seeing evidence of escalation of force by NATO participants over in Ukraine. So like it's awfully timely for this stuff to be happening, in my opinion. And then you also have to consider, like, I have the opinion of like there might be a strategy of just like using this to drive up hype for people to watch the debate coming in late June, like the first one. So that's another thing to be considerate of.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that in fact, it was just this past weekend, right? Trump basically came out in support of Bitcoin, said that he was going to protect the right to self-custody. He was going to essentially stop Senator Warren and her, whatever he called them, people from coming after Bitcoin. He was going to basically make it so that the U.S. is more friendly to Bitcoin and crypto-related development, which is really, in my opinion, incredibly important because, you know, over the last month or so, you had all these things go down where those two developers from Samurai were arrested. And it scared a lot of companies out of the U.S. There's a lot of slew of companies after that, half dozen to a dozen companies immediately over the you know, the last 3-4 weeks or so have come out and said, we will no longer serve U.S. citizens because we're basically afraid that the U.S. government is going to come arrest us.
Yeah.
And some of these companies aren't even in the United States of America, right? But they're basically no U.S. citizens.
Pardoning Ross Ulbricht, which is a huge deal, in my opinion. I mean, he didn't just support crypto and Bitcoin. He, you know, talked about freedom for a guy who's been wrongly imprisoned. And so
because of Bitcoin.
Because of Bitcoin, right?
Yeah. I mean, the fact that was the one thing that I think united the Libertarian Party this weekend.
Yeah.
There's nothing that can unite the Libertarian Party. Like nothing on earth. Free Ross Ulbricht, standing ovation. Let's go.
That was surprising.
And everyone wants to say, "Well, do you believe him? Will he really do it?" Like that doesn't even matter. The fact is that there's so many people that are now going, "Who's Ross Ulbricht? What's he in jail for?" And it's drawn so much attention to it. That alone is a victory. So all these people that are like, well, you can't trust what he says. You don't have to. It's the fact he said it. And I have had multiple conversations since I think that was Saturday that he said that. Yeah. I've had multiple conversations with people about Ross Ulbricht since then and have told them like what the situation is. And they're like, oh yeah, that's BS. Like I'm glad he said that. So just use these things as opportunities to push certain messages. It doesn't matter what I don't trust that he's going to do it either, but he said it. Let's hope this
will do it. I mean, you make a statement like that, it's pretty hard to back down from it. And commuting a sentence isn't hard to do. I mean, my sense is he'll really do that. I don't entirely trust that he even knows what self-custody is.
Fully understands. I will protect your right to do it, though.
Yeah, exactly. All I think is that somebody, you know, Vivek plus others got in his ear and said, hey, guess what? There's a big voting block here and you can own all of it. You know, all you got to do is criticize Elizabeth Warren, who I'm sure he hates anyway.
You mean Pocahontas?
Yeah, exactly. And here, you know, here are the words you got to say, sir. And he's like, yeah, okay, I can say that. Why not? Right. You know, off we go. So it's all pretty good.
Also, people are going to forget that he pardoned Ross Ulbricht when he's also pardoning himself.
That's right.
That's the funniest part, right? We were talking about this before we went live. It's like, okay, what if this unfolds as a scenario? What if, so he's convicted. What if he actually goes to jail, then is elected president? Maybe he doesn't go to jail. Maybe the trial is appealed till after he's elected, but he gets elected president. Can't he just like pardon himself?
I think he can. You know, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I suspect that they'll be able to appeal it. And I suspect that all parties involved will recognize that if they don't allow an election to occur, that's a huge, huge problem. And so, even though this thing is hanging over his head, my guess is that it'll all get shoved back till after the election. The election will occur, and then if he's president, he could pardon himself, right?
At least commute his own sentence.
At least, exactly, and allow him to serve, and then deal with it afterwards or something.
Because he hasn't been impeached. The only way you can't run for office again is if you're impeached. So Matt asked a lot of good questions. I think this one is great. Is the Trump conviction a confirmation of no election? I definitely don't think so. It's a two-party system, and one party took out the other political party. True or false? Yes. However, it's not that they've taken out his whole election team, right? His legal team and everybody else is going to be fighting in every one of the 50 states They've already had the Supreme Court overturn being left off of other ballots.
Right, the state ballots, yeah.
So that's probably still not going to happen. He's going to be on the ballot, and the ballot box, you know, November 5th, if there's anything that's going to happen, it's this just the overwhelming support for this guy. You know, what we saw in the Bronx last week, you know, on what was it, last Friday. And now this is just going to invigorate more and more and more people. You're going to see more Trump flags, you know, on back trucks. And flying in front of houses and
trucks with lift kits specifically.
There's going to be more babies named Trump this year than ever. It's going to be
Donald. Hey, what are we naming the baby? Donald.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too is like how many people I thought it today. I was like, man, it's going to feel pretty good like voting for somebody that's in jail. Like there's a little bit of a rebelliousness to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I'm gonna be a part of history times two, and I'm gonna write down the guy's name. All right, even if you have to write him in, right? Because that's the other thing that people can't forget. Like if he's not on the ballot, you can write his name in.
Yeah. How wild would that be?
Talk about DE&I, right? Let's vote for somebody who's incarcerated.
Yeah.
Sorry. What the hell was I going to say before I came up with a stupid joke? but yeah. The thing is, he's becoming more of a hero is all that this is doing because his platform has been saying the whole time, you know, they're not really after me. They're after you and I'm just in their way. That's what he's been saying the whole time.
Yep.
And he's going to just be a martyr. And the fact is, I mean, they kind of have, you know, something to feed that narrative because none of this is about actually pursuing justice. This is not about the rule of law. They're not pressing charges and having these trials against him because they care or they give a shit about him paying somebody to do anything or violating any business laws or anything like that. It's obviously an attack. And again, I feel like I have to throw up my big disclaimer. All right. I'm not, you know, I don't love the guy. It is what it is. I think that, you know, things could be better one direction or the other, depending on how the election goes, if it occurs. But, he's becoming more than just a person or a candidate. He's becoming a symbol. He's becoming, the hero of the downtrodden. I just don't think that his adversaries realize how much strength they're actually giving him because that's it. I think that's exactly what he needs. And you better believe he's got a damn team of people that are prepared to take all of this information and to use it to strengthen their position.
Yep. Shane.
What a pre-show. Let's roll this in. Bitcoin veterans coming at you. Hold on to your butts.
Oh, yeah.
Man, welcome to Bitcoin Veterans. Let's go. Jordan's ready. I think everybody else is ready. Everybody's pumped up. This is going to be a spicy show. We've had a great time already. Larry takes the cake for being the earliest guest. We've been doing this for a little over, I think, 35 minutes already. So, Larry, you're a trooper. We will make introductions officially. I don't think anybody in the Bitcoin space actually needs it, but we're going to do it because we're professionals. This is Bitcoin Veterans. We are Bitcoiners. We are veterans. We do this to put you back on the mission. Find that passion. Find that spirit of Americanism that we are all told about. It was fiction, and now we're going to bring it back, take it out of the perverse hands of the state and everybody else. This is a show where we are action oriented. We've got a whole army of Bitcoiners that are veterans and civilians out there behind the scenes that are working on missions such as Gabe with Operation Bitcoin, skill sharing. We've got Brave. We've got guys working on Citadels, comms, you name it. If there's something that you want to work on, you've got a passion for in Bitcoin that you want to bring to this group of action-oriented people, you can do it here. You get in touch with us through Twitter or wherever else we're at, and we will put you on the mission. But tonight we have Lawrence Lepard. But before we make that introduction, Alex Stanzik is going to tell you about our sponsor, and we're going to pay some bills.
Yeah, right on. So one of our sponsors is KC Cattle. They do meat. Meat is awesome. Like, who doesn't like meat? If you don't like meat, I don't know what to say. KC Cattle is a company that understands the power of decentralization, going direct from producer to consumer. They get Bitcoin. They're on Nostr and Twitter. DM them. Tell them you heard about KCC on this pod. Say hi. Get to know them. Portion of their sales goes towards helping Bitcoin vets, and this pod specifically. For those of you in our Bitcoin veterans chat groups, we got a special discount code to buy beef from KCC using fiat. Contact us for details. When you check out, add Bitcoin vets in the notes field at checkout so that you can get a free gift of the world's best tasting Wagyu hot dogs. KCCattleCompany.com.
That's some good looking stuff. Wow.
It's amazing.
Delicious.
Oh, I'll give that a try.
Yeah, I highly, highly recommend their ribeye. It's one of the best cuts of meat I've ever had.
Wow. Okay.
Grill it up. 2 minutes, sear it on each side. 400 degrees for about 10 minutes in the middle. It is perfect medium rare. Oh, man. Knock your socks off.
They'll ship anywhere in the United States. Okay. And we have special discounts. If you're not in our chat groups, even if you're a civilian, you can get in our chat groups. Contact us at Bitcoin Veterans on Twitter, and then we can hook you up with a discount code. And then also, from every now and then, they do discount codes in Bitcoin. So if you're paying in Bitcoin, big discounts there too.
Yeah. All right. For the intro, we obviously have the great Lawrence Lepard here tonight. He has spent his entire career as a fund manager and an investor prior to becoming heavily involved in the sound money movement. He was a venture capitalist from 1983 to 2003. Since that time, he has managed a gold mining stock fund and has been heavily involved with Bitcoin and the sound money fund. Welcome to the show, Larry. It is absolutely a pleasure to have you here.
It's great to join all you guys. A lot of old friends, Mike and Alex, etc. Nice to meet you other guys. I mean, I'm not a vet. My dad was, but a lot of respect for vets, people who serve this country. And I don't know how I got the title great. I don't think I'm great. I'm just an old guy fighting the system.
You know, it's funny, as I was talking to Alex one day, this was a couple of years ago, and it was all the spaces, and he was crushing it over there on Cafe Bitcoin. And he said, "Hey, I got to run here in a second. I got Lawrence Lepard coming on." I was like, "Man, that guy, what did I say, Alex? Something like, you know, field grade general knowledge of Bitcoin, and, you know, kind of having that commanding presence." You know, one of the things that stands out about it is obviously you're a boomer, you're in this space, and you are so far down the rabbit hole in front of most of your generation on that. It's that's, I mean, it's an
excellent. Sure. My peers are just lost. I mean, it's they're all just, you know, they're drowning in fiat, and some of them are very rich and they think they earned it. And it's fucking pathetic.
I think they earned it.
it really is fucking, you know, it's pathetic. I mean, I just,
that's the thing though. It's like, this is super common amongst people who are wealthy because of fiat right now.
Yeah.
Is that fiat has treated them well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I've been to country clubs that are, you know, you basically need to be close to a billionaire just to be a part of it. And talking to the people there, it's treated them so well. Bitcoin is not on their radar. They don't care.
They think they're the fucking smartest guys in the room, and they don't realize they just tripped and fell in shit. I
mean, yep.
Yeah. I was at a birthday party for a 60-year-old that we know pretty well. And private equity guy was there, and you know, he said he knew who I was. He was obviously very anti-Bitcoin. And, you know, he started railing on Saylor because Saylor's selling stock. And, you know, Saylor had to sell the stock because his options were going to expire, his 10b-4 program. And I just, you know, he kind of started just going off on every single tangent of it. And it's because he's made a ton of money in a fraudulent business. And I, you know, eventually I just kind of looked at him. I said, "Well, you know what? We'll see. We'll see how it all works out."
Yeah.
Because, you know, someday that fucker's going to be broke and I'm going to be living in his house.
Right on.
Man.
And I'm looking forward to that. You know, I mean, actually I'm not, because I really don't want to live in his fucking house, but the, you know, But just the point is, I mean, you know, he's got a $10 million house, and you know, it's disgusting. It's just fucking disgusting. So
we've got ornery Larry right out of the gate.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
It doesn't take much to get me started, as you know, Alex.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the day that I knew that, so I don't know if you remember this, Larry, but at Pacific Bitcoin a couple of years ago, I sat down next to you in the VIP section, whatever, which is a comfy couch. We were just hanging out and talking, and I got to know you a little bit then. And I knew from that moment on, I was like, this dude, he's one of our people, man. And ever since then, like, you know, having you on Cafe a couple of times.
Oh, you've been very kind. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, that's why I now refer to Larry as General Lepard.
Oh, stop.
You have the... No, listen, seriously. Like, in an honorary sense. Like, obviously, you weren't in the military, etc. And I don't feel like... You know, I don't feel like this is, like, you know, putting you in a LARPing perspective. The way I think of it is that you have the mental chops and you have the attitude of someone that men would follow. That's the reason why I kind of created that moniker. Yeah. You know, and honestly, any of the military guys who are listening to this, I don't think they disagree with that.
Well, that's very kind of all you guys. I mean, I'm just a pissed off guy. I mean, these fuckers, I mean, you know, I think I bridge an interesting gap, right? I mean, so I went to Harvard Business School and, you know, all the guys there were fiat guys. And they all went to Wall Street. They all went on to make hundreds of millions of dollars. And there were several points in my career where if I'd chosen differently, that would have been me. But, you know, right from the get-go, I could just see how dishonest it all was. And so I tried to stay on the honest side of the ledger, which cost me a lot of money. But I was able to stay true to my values. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, they've the wrong guys have won here. That's what's pissing me off. I mean, this country was built on a certain set of standards and values, and you know, those have been corrupted, and you know, the wrong people are winning. You know, the people who are rich are criminals. You know, all the guys that, you know, the biggest example of that is the GFC, where, you know, I mean, it was very funny. I mean, you know, I don't know how many people know who Lloyd Blankfein is, but he ran Goldman Sachs during the GFC. And there was a time when he got on Twitter and he started holding forth on all kinds of things about national policy, war, the Pentagon. I mean, all kinds of shit that military guys would be interested in. And I started responding to him on Twitter. I said, look, asshole, shut the fuck up. Okay. You basically were running a bank that was bankrupt and you should have personally been bankrupt. And instead, you're living in a $60 million house in the Hamptons because the fucking government bailed you out. None of us here on Twitter give a rat's ass what you have to say. Shut the fuck up. And I said, every time he would post, I would say that. And eventually he just stopped posting, you know? So, I mean, I think, you know, to allow the fiat lords to, you know, live in their fantasy world without calling them out on it, you know, that's to me, that's a problem. I mean, I went to Harvard Business School. The business school ran a seminar where they had Hank Paulson, Larry Summers, and Geithner come back and try to whitewash the GFC. And you know, well, we had to do it and this, that, and the other. And then they, you know, they asked the question, is there anybody here who thinks that what we did wasn't the right thing? And I raised my hand, they called on me. I stood up and I said, yeah, absolutely. What you did wasn't the right thing. It was fucking criminal what you did. You bailed out the criminals. You let the guys who had created the problem live another day. You used the excuse of saying that the ATMs would fail if you didn't do it. And it was just plain fucking wrong. And I said that in front of probably 700 Harvard Business School grads and to the guys who had done it. And, you know, some guys were booing me and I got a few claps. And after it was all over, I was out in the lobby and most people were just ignoring me, wouldn't touch it, wouldn't even come close to me. Probably had a handful of guys who came up to me and said, fucking A, man, that took guts. You are so fucking right. And the reason I could do it is because I just don't work for any of those guys and I just don't fucking give a rat's ass. Yeah. I don't care what they think of me. I mean, I'm not going to let fucking criminals run this country and pretend like what they did was right because it wasn't, period.
Let's go.
Right. I mean, and so, you know, I mean, I've been in the Bitcoin space. You know, I've had some of the higher level thought leaders, names you guys all would know, kind of approach me and say, hey, tone it down. Do you know what I mean? Don't be so.
Never tone it down.
Never. And, tone it up.
Yeah. And that, you know, and my response is just, you know, no, fuck that.
Yeah,
you know, you're gonna let these criminals take advantage. Yeah, you're gonna let these criminals take advantage of us and not call them up. Well, let's be positive. You know, let's be cheerful and constructive, right? Yeah, that's all nice. Okay, I get it. You know, you're a big target. You don't want to put a target on your. Fine, I'm a little target. I don't have to be cheerful and constructive. I can be angry and pissed off, and you know, and I'm gonna be because somebody's got to say it.
Somebody's got to say it. I absolutely agree with that. Here's the thing. It's like. You know, some folks are like, you know, Saylor said it. I would rather be not a martyr, but a winner. And I get it. I totally.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm glad you brought that up, Alex, because I heard that and I was really fucking disappointed. Okay. And let me tell you why I was disappointed, because that implies that he cares more. That implies that he's got situational ethics and he cares more about winning than about being on the right fucking side. Okay. I'd rather be a martyr than a winner. I want to fucking live on principles. And if I fucking die, so be it. At least I died on the principle I believed in.
I'll tell you what, if there was anyone who had a doubt that Larry Lepard has a warrior spirit, that's over.
I'm just a regular guy.
I would run through.
That's exactly what a warrior would say, Larry.
But I'm just telling you, when I heard that line, I was like, Michael, don't say that. Don't say that. That implies that you care more about the outcome and being the winner than you do about the underlying fucking principle of what we're talking about here. And this is all about the principle. And if we win, great. And if we lose, so be it. We did it with honor. You know, there's a big fucking difference. And you guys, I think veterans can understand that.
Yeah, all warriors understand that.
Young men, if you're out there, listen up. This is it. When Larry is saying stand on principle, win, lose, draw, whatever it is, that is absolutely the message. Just winning for the sake of winning, there's no, like you said, there's no honor in that. There's absolutely zero in that. There's no conviction. There's no fire. We have to have people like this. There's a great part of, I think it is the movie Troy, where Achilles is riding in. Some boy says something to him, and he says something to the effect of, that's why nobody will remember you. We have to have men that will stand on principle and say the things that need to be said as hard as they are to hear, and understand if these men are coming from an honorable principle place, those hard things, those are the lessons that we have forgotten, that if we don't shape up, we're going to have to learn the hard way.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of situational ethics in today's world, and a lot of people care more about, you know, winning and how they look than about, you know, doing it in a way that's an honorable way to have done it. And that just is what it is. I mean, it, you know, you can't, people get made in different forms, and you know, all these fiat guys, you know, they're winning, and good for them. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we all leave a legacy, and I'd much rather have my legacy be that I stood for something that I believed in. Even if it means I don't win. And I'm used, by the way, I'm used to not winning. I mean, I've been in the gold trade for a long fucking time. And let me tell you, when you're in the gold trade, you get your fucking face punched in on a regular basis.
Thank God for Bitcoin, right, Larry?
Yeah, right.
So
yeah, thank God.
I mean, I get it. I was a gold guy too. That shit's pretty painful.
You're right. It's very painful. And it's like, you know, finally, I mean, I've got this new, I mean, I think I've said this, I've told this anecdote many, many times. I was out there in the 80s and 90s fighting this battle. And, you know, when I started having 30-year-olds coming up to me and quoting von Mises, I was like, holy fucking shit. You know, the reinforcements have arrived.
I'm no longer alone.
Really great. Because,
you know what's interesting about that? Right. That didn't happen until Bitcoin. Do you remember?
Well, no, that's right. No, it definitely didn't happen. And you know what? It really didn't happen. It didn't happen until Safe's book. I think Safety and Amos will be, you know, in the annals of, he'll be Rothbard or von Mises or, you know, any of the great Austrian economists. He will be right there with him, because I think his book brought an entire generation into the knowledge that Keynesianism is a lie, which it is. I mean, it's the fundamental lie that we're living here is that, you know, that, that the government can control unsound money and create better outcomes. And of course that serves all the people in government.
Yeah.
And that, that level of corrupt, and it's led to the corruption that we see today.
Absolutely.
That level of corruption is all based on, you know, the Keynesian lie that got started a long time ago. I mean, you know, this fucking pedophile, I mean, Keynes, who was known to be a pedophile, you know, he made the statement. He said, in the long run, we're all dead, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
Think about that. Think about how evil that is. That's like saying, yeah, you know, go ahead, let's eat all the fucking seed corn, because in the long run, we're all dead. I don't give a shit about my kids and my grandkids.
Right.
Sounds like a core tenet of today, basically.
It's, right. It's really a core tenet of Marxism. Yeah.
Zero time preference, right?
Yeah.
Know, just get what you can while you can get it. Who gives a shit?
And that's the big difference, really. And that's why what you're saying is so necessary right now, because it's not even about us. It's not about if we're winning or not. And it can't be about us being concerned. Well, I'm going to look like this, or I'm going to succeed. Right. It's not about that. It's about
the boss
them.
Is it right. It's about the kids. It's for the fucking kids. It's the legacy, right?
Hell yeah. Yeah, man, this reminds me of, I think we talked about it a little bit in the pre-show, but Bill Stebbins released an article a couple of days ago, and it was basically, it was about, you know, being a sheepdog and stepping up and just, you know, confronting this emasculated freaking society that we're living in. And we have these multiple generations of men that are just kind of, you know, sitting back, and they're not really, you know, getting engaged, and they're, you know, kind of just following orders. And we've seen that happen before throughout history, and we're seeing it happen again now. And those are the ones that are letting the shit happen that is the most devastating to our society. And it's the ones that stand up just like you did in front of that group of 700 people and said, no, this is bullshit. This is wrong. Those are the ones that are changing things, even if it means that it's going to cause, you know, an unpleasant situation for the individual. It's more than just about the person. And so that's exactly what we need in this country and in this world right now, is more people that are going to stand up and say, no, this is bullshit. And it doesn't matter, you know, what you think about it, because we know that it's wrong.
Yeah.
Speaking of sheepdogs, Shane, you want to narrate this, or do you want me to? You're muted. All right. This was written by Bill Stebbins. Bill Stebbins is a former U.S. Army cavalry officer, armor officer, excuse me. He's going to be hosting contingency work groups at Nashville at the Bitcoin Veterans Citadel. That's going to be a work group where we're going to be wargaming potential attack vectors on Bitcoin. He wants to get as many of the smartest people in Bitcoin as possible there to work through these scenarios with him. But anyway, he wrote a very interesting article recently called An Open Letter to the Sheepdogs of America. And we're not going to read the entire thing. I'm just going to do a couple of excerpts here because it's really good and it's timely. Number one, just following orders is the indefensible safe space of the morally emasculated. Evil thrives when sheepdogs cower. A recurring historical tragedy that those who should be the sheepdogs of society, local sheriffs, police, military, too frequently sacrifice their morality upon the altar of the state. They drop to their knees before the petty tyrants, and they turn their weapons on their own people. Those who should be society's sheepdogs degenerate into mangy hyenas, subduing and terrorizing the very people they have sworn to serve. He goes on to say, our existential struggle is now. As 2024 proceeds, we're well within the gaping jaws of an existential struggle for our constitutional republic. By the way, it is a republic. For those of you who don't know, who think it's a democracy, it is not. It is a constitutional republic. Furthermore, Marxist jackals eager to throw the last spadeful of earth on our Constitution's grave need the military, the police, and the three-lettered agencies to finish their soft coup. For all their plotting, bribing, blackmailing, and extorting, they nevertheless can't succeed without widespread sheepdog submission. That's you guys. You have to submit for this to work for them. You, the sheepdogs, are critical. Capability without which they fail. I'll stop there. thoughts, comments?
Yeah, this is a perfect time to start talking about why CBDCs would be so damn bad. Because if you get CBDCs in this mix versus Bitcoin, your sheriff is going to sit there and take CBDCs or is incentivized to take CBDCs. There's no atrocities that they will not commit for payment. And like they said, the hyenas, the mangy ass dogs that are out there that they are, they're going to turn their guns on the people that they're sworn to protect and violate their oath, Article 6, Section 3 of the Constitution. And like there's a really warm place in hell reserved for people like that. Like talk about needing a time to stand up. If there's anything you can do, start talking about to your sheriffs. See where they're at on this. Will you accept a CBDC? If you will, boy, tell you what, you guys need to start looking for new sheriffs in your location. That's for sure.
Any other thoughts before I finish this last part here?
I think it was awfully timely of Bill to publish that. And then we have the events that we were talking about in the pre-show with regards to a certain political personality getting kind of political persecution in the American judicial system. Like, and that particular individual a couple of days ago also talked about, shout out to Shane over on the other direction, like he actually mentioned how he was going to work with local sheriffs and give sheriffs the capability of going after some of these particularly egregious criminal individuals that we've been talking about. So, like, again, reiterating what Shane said, like, if you got community leaders, like, even beyond sheriffs, like, just individuals in your neighborhood or your family or whatever, that are going to be comfortable with taking something that they can be used to absolute discretion in order to manipulate your economic activity, which not a whole lot of normies think it means a whole lot, but if your purchasing behavior can be predicted, then it can be steered. And if they have absolute control over the money, like it can just be pulled out of your bank account and put right back in, or like have time locks or whatever. Like
if you don't like, or you take a particular political stance, or you speak out in a way that they don't like, they can literally lock down your money or just take it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not even really an if at this point. Like, they have that capability. Like all the trucker convoy, like that was a great example. They may not be in America, but they still use American like stylized systems, right?
Yeah.
So, like, it's already here. It's lying in wait in the shadows, waiting to pounce. And the opportunity to pounce is when they get absolute, down to the minute level of data with CBDCs. Like, it gets really apocalyptic really quick there.
Larry, you got anything? And then we'll wrap this part up.
No, I agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, CBDCs are horrible. I think people are aware of it, though, and you know, the movement to stop it is real. It's likely to occur in a crisis. I think that's what they're waiting for, is the next crisis, and then they'll introduce it. You know, we'll give you this money, and it'll be in the form of a CBDC. Right.
All right. Last part of Bill Stebbins' letter: blind eyes are traitorous. If you turn a blind eye to injustice, panicked to selfishly save yourself and your own skin and that of your family, your epitaph will read that in your greatest moment of decision, when your nation needed you the most, you instead caved and actually condemned your family to a future of empowered evil. If you see immoral activities occurring, especially under the umbrella of wicked policies and laws, human trafficking, border invasion, corruption, political persecution, election fraud, but turn a blind eye, don't rationalize that you're a powerless bystander unable to affect change. Rather, by complying, you become a facilitating hyena, a traitor to your family and nation. And while it may seem easier in the moment to simply comply, the psychological and spiritual harm will badger you to the grave. Just following orders is the pathetic safe space of the morally emasculated. For the sake of your family and how they will remember you, commit now to know what you're about to strengthen your backbone and soul and be the sheepdog that protects America.
God.
Great message.
Hell yeah.
That's
hell
good
yeah.
Message.
Yeah, it gives me a lot of hope. gives this. I think Americans have been silent because they have the strength to be silent. And, you know, to sit here and withstand the storm that is upon us and not be violent. Really, what an amazing group of people. They could have launched in 2020 and had every right to do so. And they've still just said, hey, we'd prefer a peaceful means of transition to whatever we're moving into.
That's a good point. Cause like actually like on Spaces for the last like 18 months, there's been quite a few like international personalities, whether like there, I remember one from Australia and a couple from like Europe. They're around like, I think Germany and maybe France on Spaces. And they were like, they were ranting, they were railing. They're like, why haven't you Americans like frozen up? Like you have all the guns. Like, why aren't you doing this yet? It's like, you don't understand the responsibility that you have when you own firearms. Yeah. Like, you don't just pop off at the first
not only that. Not only that, once you choose that pathway, there's no going back. There's this poem about the man who just wanted to be left alone. Right? I don't know if you guys have heard it, but basically, I'm going to paraphrase it. It goes basically something like, that guy will wait and never do anything, take up arms ever, because they don't want to. Because by doing so, you basically are committing suicide. Your former life is gone. You realize in the moment that you take up arms that everything has changed and you've completely given up your life and you'll never go back. Like, this is the shit that's it.
Yeah.
Play it. It's really good.
Play it.
Can't get the sound. It's audio.
Come on, producer, make audio.
Is it because you're on mute, Shane?
No, the forced and permanent change of life that will come from. They know that the
My man bad.
Who wanted to be left alone. The most terrifying force of death comes from the hands of men who wanted to be left alone. They try so very hard to mind their own business and provide for themselves and those they love. They resist every impulse to fight back, knowing the forced and permanent change of life that will come from it. They know that the moment they fight back, their lives, if they have lived them, are over. The moment the men who wanted to be left alone are forced to fight back, it is a form of suicide. They are literally killing off who they used to be, which is why, when forced to take up violence, these men who wanted to be left alone fight with an unholy vengeance against those who murdered their former lives. They fight with raw hate and a drive that cannot be fathomed by those who are merely play-acting at politics and terror. True terror will arrive at these people's door, and they will cry, scream, and beg for mercy, but it will fall upon the deaf ears of the men who just wanted to be left alone.
Yeah.
That gave me, like, Band of Brothers vibes, or, like, Inglorious Bastards.
I got to tell you, you know, as one of the guys here that has, you know, seen some extreme action in house-to-house combat, if you guys have ever seen that Mike Tyson video where he talks and he cries and he kind of weeps about the guy that he becomes before he goes into the ring, or the guy that he has to become to go into the ring. When you're talking about those guys having to bury the peaceful man to go on the warpath, like, that is a awful, awful, awful choice. Just a terrible choice, because you know it's ahead of you. You know the days, you know the moments, you know the incredible suffering that's going to come, possibly even at your hands, and you have no choice at that point. You have zero choices left. You're backed into a corner, and it's you or them. And now it's scorched earth time. That is not what we want to be. That is not what we need for the human species. And that alone, I mean, what a powerful thing. What a powerful warning to say, enough, guys. Like, stop this before you push people way too far.
Well, Shane, I think that's a good thing to highlight too, because like you see a lot of like the guys, I feel really bad for not remembering the name. They put together, there was a couple dozen of them put together that bill from the military. I can't think of it, but like what I wanted to highlight was that a lot of the emotional charge that's coming from a lot of these guys right now, it's not even necessarily like they're angry that like you're like what's going on is threatening them having to make that decision. It's like, I don't want to make this decision. Stop it. Like, you're gonna force my, you're gonna force all of our hands in a way that, like, we don't want it. You don't want it. You think you want it, but, like, we're all gonna regret it when we get there. Like, just don't.
Yeah. Here's the thing. They think they want it, but the reality is, all of the fucking pipe hitters, all of the really, like, the dudes who are door kicking, the dudes who know how to do the things that nobody else wants to do, most of them have been either pushed out or they left. And they're all us now. So that fight that they think they want, I promise you, they don't want.
All right, this wraps this episode of Bitcoin Veterans. A little levity here. No, you're right, Alex. This is we are in some strange times, and I think, you know, with Larry here painting a brighter future, hopefully. You know, I've always had great respect for how you're able to come into the space and really command a presence, and this is you know, I think there's, you know, an entire group. You got over 700 people out here, for God's sakes, this early in the show that are listening, you know, to your message. And I think they're here because they respect it. I think they really adore, you know, what you have to say. And it comes with, you know, a quiet fury that a lot of men just don't have these days. And I'm curious, you know, what drives you? What drives you to get out there and to continue to say these things? Because I think a lot of guys are weary. They're tired. They're, you know, this wearing down has got to a lot of people where they've like, hey, I'm just going to step away.
Yeah. Look, I get weary and tired too. And I mean, you know, this has been a long, long fight. And, you know, there were times where I felt like I was kind of out of the fight. I mean, and still there are going forward. It's not simple. I guess what drives me is you know, I think the advantage I have over some of the younger Bitcoiners is that I, at 67, I have a lot of historical perspective. I mean, I was born in 1957. I grew up during the 60s. I mean, I know people who went to Vietnam and fought in the Vietnam War and died. I saw the country at that time, which had a lot of flaws, but it was a different country than the country we have today. I grew up in the Midwest, grew up in Ann Arbor, Michigan. You know, the wealth inequality wasn't so large. I was middle class, arguably upper middle class, because my father had a business. So but I went to school with people whose parents were laborers and truck drivers and mechanics and worked on the assembly line at Ford and so forth. And, you know, a couple neighborhoods over, I'm the guy who ran Ford Motor Company, had a house, but, you know, he wasn't making, you know, 20 million when everyone on the line was making 100 grand. He was making, you know, 400 grand and everyone on the line was making 40 grand or something. I mean, there was the difference between the wealthy and the middle class wasn't as distinct, right? You know, and his kids went to the same school I went to. There weren't, you know, all the private schools or as much of that kind of thing. The elitism that now exists. And it was a better country. People helped each other. And there was a lot more kindness. And, you know, I think it still is a great country. I mean, if you really look at most Americans, you know, I mean, thankfully we haven't lost kind of the Judeo-Christian values and the thought patterns that make this country great. And there's a large remnant and that I think knows something is wrong. You know, particularly older people know something is wrong, because when I look at America today, it's just so distinctly different than the America that I grew up in. I think it's no coincidence that when we went off the gold standard in 1971, that was kind of the largest, you know, change in the monetary policy that we had really ever, more or less. And so to me, that was the beginning of the end. I mean, it led to, you know, the extreme financialization that we've now got, which is why, you know, the top 1% control over 50% of the wealth and the bottom 50% are struggling to put food on the table. And, you know, my kids who are in their 20s can't even afford to buy a house. You know, and I'm angry about it. I'm angry about it because I know that it didn't have to be this way. And I think we worship these false idols, you know, the, you know, we did a lot of things. I mean, it was, you know, my generation, the larger part of my generation was focused on just chasing a buck. You know, it was all about, you know, just make a lot of money so you can buy a nice car and have a nice house and be comfortable. I mean, that was kind of the boomer ethos, you know, post-World War II. And, you know, and so they bent the rules. You know, we let China into the WTO and that hollowed out the Midwest. And, you know, they, you know, now we've got, you know, excess drug and other deaths as a result of that, because, you know, we gave, I mean, what they call crimes of economic despair, you know, deaths of economic despair. You know, we abandoned Glass-Steagall, and that allowed the control fraud that got created in 2008 to take place. And at every, you know, at every one of these steps, you know, what happened was people in power became, they were able to change the rules and tilt the playing field into their advantage. I mean, and it's interesting. I've just started the outline. I think I'm going to write a book. I'm not 100% committed to that,
but I think
I'm going to write a book. And the topic of the book would be how to fix America and why it's broken. And I think the reason that it's broken is that, you know, it's we took these incremental steps in the wrong direction that, as I say, tilted the playing field in the direction of the people at the top.
Yeah. And,
you know, if you think about it, think about how much technological innovation there's been from 1971 to present. And, you know, we have all kinds of things in our lives today that we didn't have when I was a kid, you know, the internet. I mean, look, I'm talking to all you guys live on a computer, you know, with a broadband hookup. I mean, this is, you know, if I couldn't imagine this as a kid, right? And so with all that productivity, you know, as Jeff Booth points out, one would think we'd all be working 30-hour weeks and living fantastic lives. And the fact of the matter is we're not. And the reason we're not is because the people who run the fiat system have figured out how to suck off all the excess profits for themselves. And thus, you know, thus Jeff Bezos has a, you know, 500-foot yacht. And, you know, we've got billionaires who are, you know, who are not particularly community-minded. You know, and all they care about is getting theirs. I mean, they're filthy rich and they want to get richer. And so, you know, it's a broken system. The beauty of it all, though, you know, and people, you know, like people accuse me of being a doomer for pointing all this out, but I'm not a doomer. I'm actually quite optimistic because, you know, I think what happened here is we reached peak centralization with World War II. I mean, And centralization was a good thing in the early days because what it allowed you to do, you know, like Henry Ford in the assembly line, that was a beautiful productivity enhancement, right? He could make cars cheaper than custom guys, and he could make them quicker than custom guys, and it allowed him to pay his workers more money, and the workers could afford to buy the cars. And so, you know, that kind of centralization was a beautiful thing, and it grew and it grew and it grew as part of the industrial, you know, revolution. And, you know, we got to the point where we had real peak centralization in World War II, right? And, you know, we figured out how to slaughter, you know, 50 million, 70 million people in 5 years. The problem with centralization is, you know, it also led to a country, Germany, which is a big centralized country that got, you know, a madman got control of it. And he started this war that slaughtered 50 to 70 million people. So we've gotten to the point where what I think happened is we had diseconomies of scale. Things got too big. And because they got big, you know, they got powerful. And as we all know, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. So now you've got these enormous sclerotic structures that can scare the shit out of us and say, you know, oh, this virus, you know, this flu is going to kill you. So we got to do this. And, you know, you need to eat the shitty food and you need to pay all this stuff for medical stuff. And I mean, you know, they create all these hobgoblins that fuck our lives up. And, you know, the rest of it, we've all seen it. We're fucking fed up with it, and we're not going to take it anymore. And thank God for, you know, the guys who invented the microprocessor that then led to the computer, that then led to the internet, that then led to Satoshi. And I think that all of these things are kind of God-given, and the pendulum is now going to swing back in the other direction. And it's really great. I mean, I love the fact that Joe Rogan and Tucker Carlson have more influence than CNN and the New York Times.
Right.
Because CNN and the New York Times are just the house organs of the of yep. the policy the political state. So, you know, the good news is it's going in our direction and we're going to win so fucking big. It's going to be outstanding. My great concern is that at my age, I want to see the winning. before I have to punch out. I mean, I want to see fucking, you know, Ben Bernanke in jail. I want to see Fauci in jail. I want to see these fuckers, you know, punished for the shit they've done to us. And, you know, to do that, we've got to speed up the rate at which we're winning.
Yep.
And, you know, we're winning pretty quickly, but I, you know, never fast enough. Right. I mean, so
it's accelerating. I mean,
it is accelerating when you kind of look at the prices and you look at a lot of what's going on. I mean, things are coming quickly and we're in a fourth turning. And I mean, I've said before, you know, I mean, Saylor knows this, he won't admit it, but I don't think there's any way that, you know, by the mid 2030s, we're not on a SAT standard where everyone's buying things in SATs.
Yeah.
And the dollar's gone. It's just completely gone. So I mean, that's where we're going. And it's a very exciting time in that respect. And that's quite positive, but, you know, we're still dragging around this old shit and these people, you know, they keep fighting us. Right.
So. Yeah. And they will, they have a lot to lose. Right.
Oh, they have a ton to lose. Yeah.
The funny thing you mentioned is that, like, I think Jeff Bezos, you said, has like a 500-foot yacht. You know what's crazy about that? That's bigger than a lot of U.S. Navy warships. Like the Oliver Hazard Perry class frigate is 445 feet long.
Right. And so it's bigger than a warship. I could be wrong, Alex. I'm quoting that from something I think I read. I'm not sure. I'm
right. It's at, you're accurate with that number.
Am I?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a huge ship.
Yeah. So the thing is that, like, you know, the whole fiat system has created all of these really horrible behavioral incentives, right? Like you have a whole system right now that's basically corrupted because the money is corrupt.
That's right.
And
just take him as an example. Okay. For example, you know, he was able to basically destroy small and middle American businesses, retail businesses, because from, you know, 2008 until 2015, his cost of capital was zero.
Right.
So what he did was the old standard, you know, monopolist move, which is sell below your cost, lose money, make it up in volume until you've got all the volume, and then you can increase the prices later.
Right.
You know, and the Sherman Antitrust Act, if it had been enforced, wouldn't have allowed him to do it, but it wasn't. And so here we are, and he's a billionaire. But again, it was the fiat, you know, 0% interest rates was what allowed him to get as rich as he got. So, it's a completely and utterly fucked up system.
Yeah.
And those of us who are in this Bitcoin community, we completely see it. And, you know, it's our job to try and help our fellow citizens see it, which is why, you know, I'm considering writing this book. I mean, I'm always trying to think of ways that I can, you know, I love it, Alex. We say, get on the mission, right?
Yeah. So,
you know, I mean, my mission before I punch out is to say, be able to say, I've done as much as I possibly could to advance the cause of sound money, because I think sound money will have the biggest difference in my kids and my grandkids' lives.
I agree.
And so that's, you know, and I feel like, yeah, you know, everybody's got to have a mission. You got to have a reason to get up in the morning and do shit. You know, it's like,
and if you don't have a mission, start investigating Bitcoin. That'll give you a freaking mission. You'll start to realize, like, this is the answer. This thing fixes so much stuff that's screwed up with our society, starting with the money, but because of all the behavioral incentives that affect everything we do. If you think about it, like, you know, we spend 8 to 14, 16 hours a day running on the hamster wheel, chasing the dollar.
Right.
That affects so much of your life, man.
Absolutely.
Like the book I read says that where your time and treasure is, there your heart is also.
Right.
So you simply cannot be not affected by that. You can't spend 8 to 16 hours of your life running on a hamster wheel, chasing dollars without that affecting who you are.
Right. That's right. And it's a very good system for the people who control it. But it causes the rest of us to work our asses off in service to them.
Yeah. And the fucked up thing about the whole thing is that, like, the whole system is really designed in a way where it siphons off the wealth of everyone and transfers it to the smaller, like less than 1% of the top of the population.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's
complete insanity.
It's rather stunning. In fact, I just wondered out loud, am I able to share my screen or not? Probably not, huh?
Yeah, I don't think that's available here, unfortunately.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'll post it on my Twitter feed. There's a after the show is over, there's a really great chart that shows wealth by you know, category. And it's just kind of nice. And I think it's from the early 1980s. And it just shows how since this financialization really got going, you know, the 1% have just taken all the wealth.
Yeah, it's and crazy. Like a lot of 50%
has been flatlining, literally. And that's why you see, you know, the way that this economy is just, I mean, it's just not working for people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like if the top 1% are getting wealthier, wealthier and wealthier, everybody else's income is basically flatlined. The problem with that is the prices of things keep going up. Right. So if your income is flatlined and the prices keep going up, you're getting poorer every day while they're getting richer every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's, I mean, they're turning us all into peasants and, you know, it's time, you know, it's time for a peasant's revolt. You know, in 1342, there was a peasant's revolt. Is, you know, the joke we called it in humanities when I was in college was, you know, serfs up, right? I mean, the serfs have to rise and take back the castle because, you know, these castle holders are just, they're just fucking all of us so badly. It's just, it's beyond the pale. And
well, and what is it? What is it now? Like, I mean, there's the common parlance or mistake of just like conflating the stock market with the economy, right? Like you look at the stock market and 90% of equities are owned by the top 10%. It's like, of course, and they all have buyback strategies. So of course, they're all like getting wealthier and wealthier. While the rest
boomers
of
are generally happy with that, but everybody else, like I've heard it put it like this. It's like, if you're under the age of 45 and you don't have a tremendous amount of assets in terms of like your home and your portfolio, you're basically screwed.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's pretty much right. I mean, it's, you know, and by the way, even if you're older and you do have some assets, you're screwed. I mean, that's one of the beautiful things about Bitcoin. I mean, I think I've used this example in the past. I know a guy in his 60s got $2 million and his house is paid for. Now, you know, most of America, you know, thinking about that situation would go, that he's fairly well off and that's pretty good. But he tells me, he said, you know what? I can't stop working. The reason I can't stop working is I think I'm going to live another 30 years. And I don't know how far $2 million is going
to go. Yep.
You know, if we have massive inflation and gasoline's $30 a gallon, well, $2 million is not going to be enough.
Right.
You know, and so, and that's the problem. That's the way this debt-based Keynesian system has managed to, it's a beautiful contraption. I mean, from their point of view,
yeah, if you're the top 1%, if you're the closest to the money printer, it's fantastic.
It's perfect. It's fantastic. I mean, if you play the game and you get near the printer, you know, I mean, and this is why, you know, this is why, you know, look, Keynes basically set this thing up to benefit the moneyed class. And, you know, we've got to change that. I mean, they created the Federal Reserve. I mean, there are lots of different layers and parts of it all, but it's only gotten worse and it's only accelerating. And, you know, if something cannot go on forever, it will end. And the way the debt has grown compared to the GDP, I mean, we're at the point now where I think that, you know, a collapse is imminent within the next 10 years.
I mean, all right. Can I add one quick quote and then I'll let Gabe and Jordan ask some questions here, because we've been totally like, anyway. So here's the quote. When you see that trading is done not by
consumption,
but by compulsion, when you see that in order to produce, you need to obtain permission from men who produce nothing. When you see that money is flowing to those who deal not in goods, but in favors. When you see that men get richer by graft and by pull than by work, and your laws don't protect you against them, but protect them against you. When you see corruption being rewarded and honesty becoming a self-sacrifice, you may know that your society is doomed.
Yeah, Ayn Rand. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I posted that following, or something similar to that, following Caitlin Long's post. You know, she's trying to get a direct account with the Fed and has not been able to get one because she's a Bitcoiner and
you know,
they don't view that in a favorable light. And there's another bank very similar to hers, a similar business model even, not Bitcoin oriented, but a full reserve bank, which is the unique twist on what she was trying to do. And she, but Randall Quarles, who's a former Fed governor, is involved in it. And they applied for the same thing, this thing called a master account. And, you know, sure enough, they got one. Gee, what a surprise, right? And that, you know, it's just classic. I mean, look, the corruption, I mean, it's just, there are too many things to list. I mean, you know, Janet Yellen receiving $7 million in speaker's fees, otherwise known as bribes, from the banks that she regulates, right?
Wow.
I mean, right? My classmate at Harvard Business School, you know, Kaplan, being a, you know, the Dallas Fed head and trading the S&P based on insider information. I mean, it just, the list just goes on and on and on. I mean, Nancy Pelosi with her trades. I mean,
unbelievable. You know,
this is an incredibly corrupt and broken system. And anybody who wants to understand why, you know, it's so hard to make it in the world today, needs to understand that the system has designed it that way.
Yeah.
And that if you want to fight back, the most, you know, the strongest thing you can do to fight back is to take the money out of their hands, which is to say, to buy money that they can't print, which is to say, to buy neutral money, which the best of which is Bitcoin, the second best of which are gold and silver. And so, you know, basically, if we can get the entire nation to save in these vehicles, not in their vehicles, their whole thing, they won't be able to fund their business. I mean, their business model is selling bonds and getting people to buy stupid shit. And if we stop that from occurring, they're going to die. The business model is going to die. The government is going to go bankrupt. And by the way, that also will benefit, you know, Bitcoin holders and gold and silver holders, because, you know, there is a certain amount of wealth in this country, and it'll all get redenominated in these new sound money alternatives, and, you know, which will cause Bitcoin to, you know, first trade for $1 million a coin and then ultimately $5 million a coin. You know, and I mean, gold today, if it were priced the way it was priced pre-1971, would be $80,000 an ounce. And it's at $2,400 an ounce, which is a function of, it just shows you how much fiat currency they printed, how much fake money they've created. So it's quite a mess. But, you know, I believe there is a God, and I think that he gave us these technologies that are going to allow us to decentralize. And then, you know, he gave us Satoshi, or I think Satoshi is a collection of people who did it collectively. But in any case, he gave us these gifts, and these gifts are going to destroy this broken system. And it's well past the due date. It should have been destroyed years ago.
Hell yeah.
But it's happening now. So it's, and that's, I'm extremely optimistic about that. That's the beautiful part of the whole movement here.
Me too.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I'm going to jump in. So, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to retain my, I'm trying to keep myself under a lid right now, because I'm getting a little fired up about this, but it's like you're talking about, I mean, people feel this, people know it, and whether or not they've heard about Bitcoin, whether they know what a CBDC is, whether they understand the concept of centralization versus decentralization, or in any of the basics of economics, people can feel it. Okay. And every time we see one of these TikTok videos of some, you know, middle-class lady sitting in her SUV with a Starbucks cup, you know, talking about how she has to work four jobs to, you know, buy her shoes and all and pay her rent and all that other stuff. And I'm not making light of it, but, you know, people are like experiencing significant levels of distress over this now.
Oh, yeah.
And they're completely, and they're totally lost. And it's just, but, you know, it all always comes back to just, well, it's just the way that it is. What do we do? Okay. And then the different political parties, they'll take it and they'll direct that energy against their opponents, and they'll try to make everybody angry about it. But I say all that to say that it feels like we're at a place now where people are almost ready. They're almost ready to start hearing the truth, because they're feeling the pain. Okay. And when people are experiencing that pain, they're ready. Okay. They're ready for that lifeline. They're ready for the truth to be introduced into their life. And we've got, there are a lot of veterans that are a part of this group right now. We're growing it. And it's like Alex talked about in the very beginning. You're talking about a group of action-oriented people that are on a mission right now. And coming from you, Larry, what would you say to a group of people like this that are highly motivated, that want to do something that is purposeful, that want to be engaged in a mission? Like you said, I mean, before our tickets get punched and we're done here, what can we do on the individual level, on the group level? What would you recommend action could be taken from us?
Yeah, I mean,
to push this forward.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, we got to change hearts and minds, and hearts and minds get changed through education. And, you know, I give out copies of the Bitcoin Standard. I talk about Bitcoin everywhere I can. I tell people to download a Moon wallet, and I send them a dollar to show them how quick and easy the Lightning network is. Obviously in my case, I do a bunch of podcasts and other things. I think that, basically trying to communicate to the more of us that there are saying this and the more that it's working, the better off it'll be. And I mean, this is going to happen almost no matter what, in my opinion, because it's a better technology. It's a better solution. It's going up in price. And, we're really right on the cusp of the tipping point here. I mean, I think we're going to see 150, 200,000 a coin, in the next 18 months. And, that's going to wake a lot of people up, and they're going to realize that this is a lifeline. Now, sadly, some are going to jump in right at the 200,000 top, and it's going to correct, and then they're going to freak out. And so I always think when I'm trying to orange pill people, I always try to explain to them the volatility and that they have to be prepared that if it goes down, they're going to double down, not sell.
Right.
Because that's the only, as we all know, that's the only way you get hurt in Bitcoin is if you panic sell.
Right.
So, as long as you have a 4+ year time frame in Bitcoin, there's never been as great a wealth making opportunity. I mean, this is an enormous, enormous paradigm change, at the base layer of money. And, I think it's going to be shocking. I mean, I actually really feel sorry for all the normies and idiots like my neighbor with a $10 million house that don't fucking understand this shit. And it's because he's an arrogant bastard, it's going to be very satisfying for me to see him. But there are a lot of normal people who are just confused. And they're afraid of Bitcoin because they heard about SBF or something. I mean, yeah. I feel sorry for those people.
Yeah.
The arrogant fiat types who hate it because they recognize it threatens the game they're playing. Now, I don't feel too sorry for them at all. I want to bury their asses. But, I think the way we win is we just continue to spread the message, really. Everybody has a network of friends, and every friend, if you orange pill one person and then that person knows 20 other people and then right? How does any new idea, get adopted? And it's interesting. I mean, it is a revolution. I was just doing some research in my book the other night. Everyone thinks the American Revolution was just a foregone conclusion. We're just going to, Britain's a bad thing. We're going to leave. We're going to win. Well, John Adams wrote at the time that he thought that right in the heart, in the earlier part of the revolution, he said, basically, the way he saw it was he thought about a third of the country were patriots, a third of the country were loyalists, and a third of the country didn't know what the fuck was going on and didn't care.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I think we're not quite at that point yet, because I don't think a third of the country understands that sound money is the solution. I think we're kind of at 10% of the country that's kind of becoming aware of that. But the point is that we need to, we need to pump up those numbers, right? We need to get to the point where we're not just 10%, we're 20%, and then we're 30%, and then we're 40%.
That's right.
One of the things that is encouraging, right, is what happened in D.C. last week. And what happened with Trump and his flip-flop on this whole thing where he said he's going to pardon Ross and he's going to support the right to self-custody and he's in favor of crypto and Bitcoin. I mean, he could leave the crypto piece off, but hey, at least he, generally speaking, gets the notion that this is something that a big part of the populace cares about and he wants those votes. So, again, we just need to keep spreading the word, but it's happening. I mean, I'm not, this isn't like a panic situation. I mean, the ETFs are an enormous thing. I mean, there are all these people who are afraid. I had a lot of friends and actually converted a few of these guys who said, yeah, I get it. I understand the thesis, but the government's going to shut that shit down.
Yeah.
Well, January 10, they approved the fucking ETF. Okay, dude. Government's not going to shut it down. Government just let it happen. Now what? Oh,
yep.
Shit. Maybe I do need to own some of this, right?
Yeah.
So, that's my message that, look, this is the best money ever created. I mean, it's Saifedean's point. I mean, you want to fight with bows and arrows when you got gunpowder? No, military guys will get that.
Yeah.
It's the best technology.
You literally use the best weapon available, full stop. Yeah, and it's the best weapon we've ever seen. And it's peaceful. That's the amazing thing. It's a peaceful.
It's totally peaceful.
Hell
it's totally peaceful, except insofar as we're going to take all these fiat people and make them bankrupt, which is, I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
That's the right.
Get on the mission, spread the word. All right. So, Jordan, do you have a question for Lawrence? And then I think story time.
Oh, God.
I just want to say, like, I think this is a good, we've covered kind of like all the generations and all these different demographics, and everything seems to be coming together. I don't know if you see that too or not, but I mean, maybe you don't see that in your generation quite yet. Maybe they're starting to come around, but I even see that with your generation, yeah. Like more people coming around, yeah. Not just to the ideas of freedom and like understanding that to a new level than ever before, but kind of being like, all right, what's this money thing? What's this Bitcoin thing? How much do you see that?
No, I definitely see it. Well, look, I mean, young people get it in spades. I mean, I have a lot of young people coming up and they totally get it. I mean, I think boomers lit the last to get it, but I've seen, you know, I had a lot of people who were very resistant to it. I put it in my fund. I had some people leave my fund when I did that. And I've converted a lot of people. I mean, this, Chris Irons, who runs Quote the Raven, I mean, he was very negative about it when I first started talking to him, and I've converted him. He's full-fledged orange pilled now. It's happening across all layers of society. I think young people tend to get it more rapidly because, you know, they're just more computer literate, and they recognize that we're moving very, very quickly and strongly towards a digital world, and digital property makes a lot of sense to them. I mean, the thing I think that Saylor does such a nice job of explaining is that, I mean, this really is a technological innovation, and none of us really understand the full implications of it. I mean, when they invented the printing press, could you foresee libraries? I mean, when they invented the automobile, could you foresee the interstate highway system? You know, when they invented the airplane, could you foresee the Concorde? I mean, this is going to change the world. I mean, the invention of digital scarcity is a big fucking deal. Yeah. And your progeny, you know, your kids and your grandkids are going to remember whether or not grandpa got it. And, you know, because if he did, they're going to be fucking a lot wealthier than if he didn't.
Yeah.
Legendary.
You know, and so, I always say, just, you know, it doesn't matter. You don't have to put all your money into this shit. But if you're on zero, that's the wrong number. You got to get off of zero. And then once you get off zero and you start down the rabbit hole and you really come to fully understand what it is, you know, your weighting will go up. And of course, naturally your weighting will go up just because the price will appreciate. I mean, I'm now up to probably 60% Bitcoin because I've still got some gold and other legacy investments, but didn't start out at 60%. I mean, it's gone up 5 or 6x. So,
yeah.
Right. You know, it'll crowd out the other things that don't do as well.
Yeah.
I'm fucking standing. I will PT you all until you fucking die.
Yeah, story time. Oh, Jesus.
Who the fuck said that? What have we got here? A fucking comedian, Private Joker.
It's everybody's favorite time in the show. It's story time. We've already told one story here, Lawrence. I don't know if you're going to tell the same funny story or we're going to.
I can tell that. I mean, there's so many good stories in the movies. You know, I'm shaking that dog. I'm shaking that tree, boss. I'm shaking that tree, right? Remember that? There's just so many great stories. Yeah, I'll tell the one I told you before. It's got some harsh language in it, but yeah, you guys can handle it. So I was right out of college, and I was working down on Wall Street, and it's relevant to this group because it was a veteran, a very, in my opinion, a very respected veteran, and I was working at Smith Barney Harris Upham, and it was a one of the larger investment banks at the time. I was in the M&A group, and the vice chairman of the company was J.P. Morgan III. I mean, he actually looked like John Pierpont Morgan. I mean, he had the same bulbous nose, the whole thing. And anyway, I worked with this guy named David Faber, and David was a cracker. He was from Atlanta, Georgia, and he had fought in the Vietnam War, and he always kept his hair high and tight, and he was in fucking perfect condition. I mean, he worked out like a fiend. He was just a basic badass. And the guy, he was one of the partners, and he'd been to Harvard Business School and all that stuff. And he just scared the living shit out of me. I mean, I just, like, you know, I just knew he didn't want to fuck up working for Faber. And so one day he came to me, and I think his client was Georgia Pacific, the big paper company. And he said, "Larry, I got a project for you, and it's going to take you a long time, and it's got to be absolutely fucking perfect. We're going to show it to the board. We're going to show it to the board of directors. And if there's one, it's going to be 20 pages and all these numbers, and you got to spread them out and take them to the statistical typist and create this whole thing. And if there's one fucking wrong number in there, I'm going to fire your ass. And he said, you know, and he said, I want to tell you something, Larry. He said, most of this shit isn't necessary. I said, I wouldn't do it, but the board has asked me for it. And he said, and so in a way, Larry, these guys are jerking me off. And I got to tell you something, because they're jerking me off, I'm going to jerk you off. So, you get your ass down there and you fucking have this thing done in the next 24 hours so I can put it together and take it to the board of Georgia Pacific. And it was just one of those moments in time. It was 40 years ago now, you know, Vietnam vet, you know, partner at an investment bank. I mean, I thought, man, that shit just wouldn't happen today. You know what I mean? you wouldn't have that guy. You wouldn't have the accent. You wouldn't have the language, all of it. It just wouldn't fucking happen today.
And that is so hilarious.
It was a moment in time that I'll always remember and always kind of cherish. And I don't know if David's even alive anymore. He's got to be in his 80s now if he's alive. I'll have to look that up. But,
you know, Larry, believe it or not, that story probably resonates with our audience quite a bit, because anybody who's been in the military knows what it's like to be voluntold. It's like,
yeah,
come here, you're doing this thing whether you freaking like it or not.
Well, and when you know that, like, you've been given an order or a task that is jerking you off.
Yeah.
Like, yep.
That is too damn funny.
We all know it's bullshit, but you're going to do it anyway.
Guys.
Something's happened. What's
going on with your audio?
Yeah, I'm sorry. That was me. I apologize. I had a Lynn Alden broadcast in the background that I must have hit the wrong button when I played. I apologize. Yeah, I was volunteered to do something, and it was a tough task, I'll tell you. But anyway, good old David Faber.
You weren't gonna let that guy down. Shit.
Hilarious.
I don't know. Is that what you're looking for in terms of story?
That was perfect, man. That was great. Everybody's cracking up. It's good stuff.
I mean, we've got 1,100 live here right now, and I want to say thanks to everybody who's out there for coming in, spreading this all over the internet. We do this every Thursday night at 7 p.m. and I got to tell you, you know, every Thursday I'm excited. I'm chomping at the bit to come in here to hear things like this. I mean, what a just absolute beacon of hope and fun and bright light and a really shitty situation, right? Like we find ourselves in, and that's what you got to have. You got to have these guys that in shitty situations can laugh, that can smile, give you a wink and say, hey, this bullshit's going to be over before you know it. It's going to be fine. This is going to make for great stories later on in life that you can tell your kids and your grandkids. And that's what makes a life. I mean, what an opportune time to be alive. And
well, that's the thing. I mean, at the end of the day, I look back at my life and I think some of the tough things I went through. So those are what build character. And that, yeah. And look, this is going to be a tough fight. Let's not kid ourselves. The other side's got more tricks up their sleeve. They fucked me so many times. You know, they changed the rules in September 2008. I mean, but we're going to prevail, because we're on the right side of history. We've got the better technology, and we're morally correct in what we see and are trying to do. And so, you know, ultimately, you know, good does triumph over evil. The difference is, though, that, you know, sometimes evil can get quite a ways down the road. And, you know, they're going to be, I don't doubt that there will be some rough moments here, you know, as the other side fights back, and they will. You know, that thing you're talking about where we're talking about a sheepdog conference and talking about threats, I got a couple threats in the back of my mind that I want to discuss with the guys at that conference.
All right.
So, yep.
So maybe we bring you in for the contingency work group breakout.
I'd love to be a part of that, because I got one or two right on the top of my mind. I don't want to talk about them here. So I'm not going to give the other side any ideas.
Right.
You know, there's, I mean, I know what I would do if I were in their shoes. And so I think we got to assume they're going to try and do it.
Yeah. Yep, yeah. Fair enough.
Right. I mean, this is a fucking existential fight for all the marbles.
It is. It is. Know, right?
I mean, these guys got all the money. They got all the power. And we're trying to fuck them. And we are. And we're going to. We're going to win. But
we're gonna fuck them so good.
Yeah, but we can't be naive. I mean, we've got to recognize that they are going to, you know, they're going to try and fuck us as well. And so
I love your liberal use of the F word, Larry. Me too. I appreciate it so much.
Well, do they have one for this?
No, man.
Spot on. While we're on the subject of Nashville, guys, we have a 70% discount for you for the Bitcoin conference in Nashville. Friends, family, veterans, adjacent, all that fun stuff. Let us know. You can get in contact with us through Twitter or the bitcoinveterans.org. Correct, guys?
And that's a hell of a deal. 70% off? Nice.
Yeah.
Hey, man, like all of the conferences has totally embraced Bitcoin veterans. Like, wow. They all want to help us. They all want to, I mean, it's been fantastic. In Nashville, they're giving us a breakout room, 3,000 square foot breakout room. We're going to have our own stage.
Oh, that's great.
Like, and they're not charging us for this. Like, they're totally hooking us up. They've been very supportive of Bitcoin veterans.
Wow. I got to give David Bailey credit for that. I'm not I think I told you earlier, I'm not a huge fan of some of his stuff, but I got to give him a lot of credit for that. I will be at Nashville, right. And I try to be approachable. I encourage people to go up and say hello. You know, I appreciate the support, and I like hearing people's stories and try to be helpful whenever I can.
So further at that Nashville conference, we're going to be doing a bunch of stuff, guys. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a ton of stuff going on. We got a day of helping out the community. Gabe is going to be leading that. That's on the 24th. The next day, 25th, we are going out to the range where we're going to have a lot of guys who know a lot about firearms, teaching you basic to advanced pistol. And I think that's going to be an amazing time. Plus, some good eats out there. We still have some spaces, right, Alex? On the
A few. So here's the thing. It's like, we've only talked about it twice publicly, as far as Twitter and announcing it and whatever, and we're already almost completely full. So if you're interested in going to the range day, don't hesitate. Like, connect with me. You can do it on Twitter or alex@bitcoinveterans.org, and we'll get you hooked up.
Further, this space that we are going to be conducting in, called the Citadel at Nashville, is going to have a whole host of things going on. Obviously, we're going to be doing some wargaming. We're going to be doing some teaching about Citadels, comms, a ton of networking in this space. And I imagine it is going to kind of be the buzz of the entire event over there. So get your tickets, come to Nashville, meet up, network, and get in with this amazing group of people.
Let me add one last thing. Lots of resilience stuff. If you're into resilience type things, like, we're going to be doing breakout and workshops on Meshtastic networks, ham radio. If you want to come and get qualified to be a ham radio operator, we're doing that. We have a guy that's going to be doing the testing live. We have another guy who's former military, former law enforcement, who's going to be, his specialty is forensics, blockchain analysis. So if you want to know how to surveil yourself on the blockchain, come to this thing. And then lots of other amazing breakout sessions. Like, I highly recommend you come check it out.
All right.
Hell yeah. It's going to be awesome. One thing I want to also throw out there is the Me Premier Bitcoin Unconference is taking place on the afternoon of the 24th. And Bitcoin Veterans is supporting that effort. So, get a hold of us. You can send me an email, gabe@bitcoinveterans.org, and I got some more information for you on that. But if you're interested in the education side of things, check it out. It's going to be awesome.
All right, fellas. We reached that magical time. We're going to throw it around. And anybody got anything to say? And then we'll get out of here.
I got to say, thanks for coming on, Larry. Like, you're another one of my favorite fellow doomers, so I appreciate you. I appreciate you also sharing that, like, as doomers, we're not, it's not like we're not optimistic. right? Like, we're just trying to highlight problems so that people can acknowledge and identify them so we can fix them so we can get off to the optimism that is, like, at the core of the whole doominess to begin with. Absolutely. So thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Mike. I mean, it's – yeah, I mean, to – look, you know, if you see a shitstorm coming, you know, you want to prepare for it. And that's not being a doomer. That's just being smart. You know, and on the other side of the shitstorm, things are going to be great. And, you know, okay, Jeff Booth, great. I'm looking forward to all that. I'll you know, I'll kumbaya with you on the other side of the thing. But right now, you know, I'm preparing for the shitstorm.
Yep.
Well, and just to wrap it up, my input, like, the shitstorm is going to require a lot of work. Like, a lot of painstaking, exhausting work before you can get to the point of where you're enjoying the sunshine on the other side.
I think that's right. Sadly, I think that's right. I mean, you know, read the mandibles.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Who's next?
Well, I'll jump in there. Hey, listen, thank you for being here. This is, I think that more people just need to hear the reality of the situation and the importance and the necessity of standing up and doing the thing that needs to be done. It's not going to be easy, but it is worth it, and it is required, and it is absolutely fucking necessary that we take action and we do what needs to be done in this situation. We all feel it. We all know it. We all see it. We all feel the call, and we must follow the call. So thank you for standing out in front. Thank you for being a voice for this. Thank you for being a driving force. I appreciate it, man, and I can't wait to see you in Nashville. So
yeah, likewise, Dave. Look forward to meeting you. Thanks.
Yeah, I'll just echo everybody else. Like, I'm really thankful that you came on. This was a great conversation. I really look forward to meeting you in Nashville. And one thing we didn't mention, because we're pretty much sold out of all the tickets for the Bitcoin Veterans Meetup after day one of the conference, but there's still a couple left if people want to reach out. And we got one with your name on it, Larry.
Yeah, I'll definitely be there. I mean, the only conflict I might have is I don't know when the pleb party is. I promised them I'd go to that.
That's Thursday. I'll be there too. So maybe we'll meet up there. But
yeah, perfect.
Then Friday night we'll have the Bitcoin Veterans.
I'll be there then. Yeah, if there's nothing else, I'll definitely be there. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
All right. I just want to say that Larry, been looking forward to this for a long time. I knew this was going to be an absolute banger, and it absolutely was. You absolutely delivered. The thing about calling you General Laporte, I don't think anybody has any problems with that. Like,
well,
honorary Bitcoin general.
I never serve. All I am is the old guy who believes in Bitcoin, and I'm willing to fight.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You have a warrior spirit. The whole thing about being willing to, like, stand on principle versus, like, sacrificing just to fucking get ahead or, like, to try to preserve your own ass. That is literally the warrior spirit. If you're willing to stand in the gap, like all the guys who signed the dotted line in the U.S. military who are like, look, if I need to die, if I need to get blown up, shredded, whatever, because I believe in protecting my people, it's the same spirit. And you have that, man. So granted, you didn't serve, but I don't care. Like, everybody who's a warrior gets it. And I just appreciate you, man. Keep doing it.
I appreciate that. Thanks, Alex. You know I love you, man.
I guess I'll wrap it up here. Gabe, Alex, Mike, and Jordan, thank you guys for all being here. Larry, you have been extremely gracious with your time, and we all appreciate that. It's just, it's one of those things where you get to bask in the greatness of some individuals for a short time on this planet, and you're one of those guys.
Guys, it's been my pleasure, and I'm happy to come back anytime. I mean, we do this as often as you like. I'm where Foss is. I mean, Foss, you know, and I miss the guy. He's had his own set of problems. He's had to withdraw a little bit. Hopefully, he'll be back. But you know, my view is, you know, and Sailor does this too. I'll go anywhere, anytime, any place to support Bitcoin. I mean, that's how important I think it is. I mean, and that's, you know, if somebody asked earlier, what can we all do? What can veterans do? You know, support Bitcoin. Do everything you can. This is, I am so convinced, this is the solution to our problems. And as a result of that, we just, it's incumbent upon all of us to fight for it. You know, the same way the Patriots fought for, you know, separation from England, or, you know, et cetera. I mean, it's at that level. It's a really core thing that we've got to do if we want our kids to have a better world.
Well, we need a lot more like you, Larry. And, you know, doesn't matter to us that, you know, you weren't a veteran. Like this is the fight that really matters. And it's now, and we've got ourselves a leader. You know, thank you so much for everything you did.
You're most welcome. I enjoyed it. Like all you guys, a lot of respect for you guys, all of you, and all vets in general. So,
yeah. Thanks, guys. The rest of you guys out there, we are honored and privileged to be with you guys as well. Everybody in the chats that's doing stuff, taking action, unbelievable amount of dedication and proof of work that's going on out there. If you want to be part of it, contact us. We'll get you in there and get you going, get you on the mission. Until next week, get on the mission. We're out.